Welcome to the Humanergy Leadership Podcast. My name is David Wheatley. We're here to talk leadership in small, bite-sized, and practical chunks. Enjoy.
This is another family business best practice episode, and this week it's with Bob Barry and Lauren Clark of Bergquist. And we'll hear more about exactly what Bergquist does and their place in the propane industry. But Lauren is Bob's daughter and has recently taken over as the CEO of the organization. So this is an interesting conversation about that dynamic and the dynamic of now third generation kind of sort of taking over. And in particular, how second generation hung around, which is not necessarily what I would identify as a best practice unless you do it the way that these two did. Bob, Lauren, welcome to the podcast. And just give us an overview of Bergquist.
Bergquist is a 55-year-old wholesale distributor of propane equipment. Propane is a fossil fuel that is used to heat homes in rural areas. And then it is also, most people would probably realize, it runs forklifts too. So it's an energy source that's primarily in rural areas. And we provide all the equipment it takes for the companies that deliver that propane to the household.
So the Hank Hills, but without actually selling propane.
Yes.
Got it.
And that's a obscure reference for some. And so you're 55 years old, and so fill me in with the family business side of things, Bob.
Okay, the business was actually bought by my father-in-law in 1986. It was 23 years old at that point. And at that time, I was a CPA here, and I was helping him analyze the business, decide how much it was worth to pay for it. And I'd always had a very good relationship with him. And at some point I said, you know, if this goes through, I'd like to come work for you. So I went, when he bought it in 1980, July of 86, I went and was his controller for 9 years. And then he retired and I started running it. And subsequent to that, my wife and I have purchased it.
Okay. So you're second generation and ownership, Bob.
Yes.
And so then how does that link to the other person in our little room here, Lauren?
Well, Lauren is my daughter. When she was about 12, she said she was going to sign my paycheck someday. Then in college, she went, the major was supply chain management, which is what a wholesale distributor does. So then she went and worked for two other companies for probably 5 years out of college. And then she came to work for us. When 3 years ago, I became chairman of the National Propane Gas Association, which is the volunteer association that is the advocate for our industry in Washington. And you travel a lot when you're doing that. And so at that point, Lauren became the CEO of Bergquist.
And that's interesting to me because you did something that I would normally say run away from, which is you handed over the CEO job and stayed on to do some of the kind of CFO role. Is that accurate?
Yes. Two reasons for that. One, I don't think I was ready to walk away. And two, I still needed wages and the companies needed to help too. So it was, you know.
And I think, you know, I've worked with you long enough to know that it's worked, but it's kind of worked despite the decision in my mind, because it would be absolutely, if the owner said, well, I'm going to hand over to my daughter and I'm going to stay in the business, it would be immediately be a red flag. And so I'd love you to share between you, what are some of the practices that you had in place that have allowed that to work?
Well, I think a couple things. We decided to start that transition in January of 2020, knowing that Bob would become chairman in June of 2020. So we had some time there to make a slow transition. Obviously, the pandemic hit, so things were not quite slow and a little bit more intense. But one of the things that I think really helped, kudos to Humanergy, is that we had a huge transition happening in our leadership team. So not just Bob and I, but several other key people retiring. So it was all happening at one time. And by bringing on Humanergy and really working as our leadership team to make sure that we were aligned and make sure we had strategic plans, I think everyone, our nine leaders, were on the same page about what the plan was and what that was going to look like. So we had the, we'll call them the old leaders, and the new leaders all working together with the rest of the leadership team that was maintaining to really be aligned. And everyone knew what the plan was and kind of how that was going to go. And I think everybody was clear about what the plan and expectations were. So we were able to kind of shift that leadership and the decision making and work. Some of the stuff that people would go directly to Bob to, people just started naturally coming to me. And it allowed us to kind of, when people did go to Bob first, say, nope, here, ask Lauren, and we would work together on it. But I also think that our leadership team makes decisions as a whole. There's very little stuff happening in silos. And so that also has helped us kind of smoothly transition from one group of leadership to the current leadership that we have.
So you're very intentional, it sounds like. And if I just come back to the two of you for a second, is because that idea of the person who was in charge is now going to take a step down. The challenge is just culturally in the organization for that, because and even for Bob to completely let go. I'd love to dig into that a little bit more. And was there anything in particular that helped Bob let go? And for the rest of the organization to really start to redirect.
In terms of me letting go, I mean, in some ways, I didn't let go, and that's
It's all coming out now.
But while I am certainly a type A personality, I was born an accountant, and that was my initial career. I have, through seeing other businesses, which I think was a good part of being in public accounting, is I got to see lots of businesses. And sort of the, we had a management team where I didn't have to do everything.
Right.
And I,
So you'd already let go of a lot of things to your management team.
a lot of it, I mean, certainly the sales side, I'm not a salesman. There's a standing rule in the company that Bob's not to be left alone with customers. Because I say things that, seem reasonable to me, but aren't necessarily reasonable to the customer. So there was, there's certainly been some difficulty for me to say, I don't need to make that decision, or I shouldn't make that decision. I think it has worked some.
And I've heard it described that at some points early on in meetings, if somebody asked you a question, Bob, that was really the CEO's question to answer, you would physically turn your whole body to look at Lauren. Is that accurate?
I think that's accurate. And I think once or twice I was told that wasn't my question to answer. And I think that, again, our leadership team, we all had a pretty good understanding of one another, and they knew this transition was taking place.
And I think it says something about the amount of respect that you have for each other. If you can say, okay, I've handed over the keys, and so I'm now going to look at Lauren and see what her answer is. And Lauren's willing to say, hey, I don't think that's Bob's a question to answer, and you're respectful of that. That says a lot about the amount of respect between the two of you.
I do have a lot of respect for Lauren, and it's just one of these, if you ever want to get away, you're going to have to.
So you're saying, hey, if I ever want to ever let go in the end, I have to practice letting go now.
Yes.
So then, Lauren, you're the CEO, but Bob, you're still hanging around just a little bit as chairman of the board. Is that accurate?
That's correct.
And so then it moves me to my second kind of theme is that how do you deal with ownership versus leadership? And you can share as much or as little as you like in this one, because this is one of those that I may be digging deeper than you want me to.
Well, I think, I mean, for us, ownership versus leadership, as Bob said, he and my mom own the company, and I currently lead the company, and that's the way we intend for it to stay, until if and when we decide to change it. But for now, that's the plan. We've known that's the plan. We talk about it pretty regularly, and I think that, again, that helps just to know what the plans are. There's not expectations or assumptions being made about who or when or how that's all going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's to allow the leadership team to make all of the operational decisions, and my function is really finance. And it certainly had in my mind up till a few years ago always been my intention to sell the business to Lauren, for Linda and I to sell the business to Lauren. But the tax consequences of that are enormous. And so the way to avoid those tax consequences right now is to die still owning the company and pass. But and then in that
And
and in
none of us want
that
that just yet, by the way. We just wanted to make that point.
and in that process, that Lauren will be left as the controlling shareholder so that she can still run the business and not answer to her siblings.
And I plan for him to outlive my retirement, so it's really.
So that's easy then. So,
Yeah.
well, when and with that model though, because there's other family in the business.
That's correct. Our son Jake came into the business 2 years ago now. And he's in purchasing, it surprised me in some ways that he stayed this long. He has led a much more active life than sitting behind a desk writing purchase orders, but he's enjoying it. I've also always made it clear that Lauren's the boss.
Which
And
is always one of those interesting things about when you have different family members in, what's that clarity look like? It's a matter of, hey, Lauren's the boss. Lauren's the one that gets the controlling share. You can work here for as long as Lauren wants you to.
yes, I'm not sure we've said all those words, but
Well, I think I just said them now. I hope he listens.
yes. But, we also have my sister-in-law works for us too. But she's always been just a, she's always just worked in the business with never any real intentions of getting ownership.
And I know that deep down you actually have so much nepotism in the organization in terms of other people and relatives. You've obviously made a success of hiring family members, whether they're yours or not.
Yes, we have lots of family members in our business, or close friends of other employees. I think we have a current record holder who has six either family members or close friends that they've brought in. And I think you and I talked about this recently, David, but some businesses try to steer away from that. It's worked for us. And I think, you know, Bob, I know way back when I started and somebody wanted to hire their kid and he said, you can hire him if you're willing to fire him. That's, you know, it's up to you, but you have to be able to draw lines when needed. And for the most part, it has really worked for us. We have a lot of really great people and most of them are there because somebody else knew them and brought them in.
And that's kind of what intrigues me about this whole family business and what works and what doesn't, because some of the things you said there is that what are the parameters around hiring a family member? And so that idea of you can hire them as long as you don't mind firing them at the same time. Are there any other things you put in place that say, you know, if we're hiring family members, whether they're ours or yours, this is what our expectations are?
We don't have any clear written policies or things that we've specifically discussed around hiring family members. It's like Bob said, we've kind of had a model for a long time of our leaders running their departments and hiring who they want to hire. And sometimes people's, you know, are recommending their family members to other departments and then they, you know, go through interviewing just like any other candidate would. And yeah, and we just sort of continue to do that, and it's worked.
It's cool. And if it's working without the written pieces, that's and stick to it. I just wonder what the subconscious pieces are. Is there, you know, because you've done it so much, I wonder if there are some unwritten rules that people kind of follow.
I don't know about unwritten rules, but for me, you know the person that you're hiring, because in a lot of cases, this person that's being hired is either working within the same department or working for the relative. So you know what you're getting. And that just makes a lot of things easier, I think, in terms of relationship blending. We are a small company, and if you don't like somebody, it's really hard to avoid them when there's, you know, I mean, when there's only 20 people. And I mean, you know, we have a total employees of 75, but, you know, we have two big clusters of employees in our two warehouses, and it's just, you know, there's 20,000 square feet and it's hard to get away.
Yeah, and I think that simple rule of you're absolutely at liberty to hire them and you have to be willing to fire them is a great alignment piece up front.
Yes, and it's happened. So,
yeah, and it then just puts the ownership in the hands of the people who are doing the hiring.
Yes.
So what do you wish... And I'll aim this at Lauren and we'll see what kind of response comes up. What do you wish previous generations had done?
So you posed this question to me, David, and I really, you know, tried to think through that and come up with, you know, what could have been done differently. And I struggle with that. I know you and I have talked about before that, you know, one of our prior VPs said that my grandpa should have written a book about business and the title would have been Do the Right Thing. And when you flip to the first page, it would say Do the Right Thing. And that would be the end of the book. And I think that, you know, what happened there is that the company was started with really good culture and that culture was sort of cultivated and Bob really nourished that and it continued to grow as our company grew and it continues. And that's really what I feel, you know, my role is to help the company continue to grow, but to maintain that feeling and culture that we have always had. So I don't have what I wish was done differently. I really couldn't. I struggled to come up with something. Maybe Bob has something that he wishes he did differently or had been done differently before him. I'm not sure.
I'm a business that didn't rely on a fossil fuel because eventually that's going to come to an end. I mean, it's probably 50 years away at least, but that's something that the industry we're in is going to struggle with. And I, you know, it's just going to be hard. It's really hard for me to pick out when that's going to be, how as a society we're going to tackle that particular problem, and then
Right.
how that's going to come down on us.
And my job is to use our skill set as a business to continue to evolve, whether it's with fossil fuels or otherwise.
And that goes, you know, I have some insider knowledge that you folks are actively working on that with Lauren's leadership to say, okay, how do we take this skill set and get ready for that situation? But I appreciate that too, Bob, is that you're saying, hey, I wish you'd have been in a different industry if I look back at it. And this industry has served you well.
Yes, very well.
So the other questions that I quite often pose, especially if an organization's got a lot of family members, is what's one or two best practices that you have in place that make sure you can work together, but then you can also still go to Thanksgiving, or in the case, because I know you too well, can still bring the kids around to play on the dock.
I think the very first thing Bob and I talked about right when he hired me in 2009 was that family time is family time and work time is work time. I think those lines are easy to blur. We only have one life. There are times that, especially with working remotely, and as you know, we live very close to each other. So, but we try and have worked pretty hard at not having work conversation when we're with our family. And I think that probably is the number one thing that holding that boundary in place helps. And the other is communication. If you communicate and work through things, then there's not drama to make Thanksgiving uncomfortable. We haven't, I don't think ever, I've never been in a point where I've felt like, oh, I don't want to go over, to the lake this weekend. I don't want to go run my kids over to play. So that's not, it's not been an issue, but I think communicating and avoiding things piling up is a big piece of that.
Right. So you're not going to withhold the grandkids from grandpa because he said something at work that upset you.
Well, that wouldn't be a punishment. Dropping them off and leaving them there would be more of a,
I
I
think
wanted to give them a hard time.
I'm guessing Bob's boss would come would differ on that one, but that's
Yeah.
another story.
Most definitely.
So what are your plans for the next generation? You kind of alluded, Lauren, to you hope that Bob outlives your retirement. Do you foresee this continuing to be a family business, or you see, I mean, your kids are very young yet, Lauren.
Yeah, they're young, although older than I was when I told my dad I was going to sign his paycheck. So I guess there's hope for that. I feel like I don't know if it will continue. I think that there was no expectation that I work in the family business, and there was also no assumption on my part that I would be able to or that I would get to. So I feel the same way about my kids. I don't want them to feel obligated to do it, and I also don't want them to think that it's going to be handed to them. It's really about I happened to go into business. I chose supply chain that was fitting, and again, not with the intention that I would come to Berquist, even though I did make a bold statement as a 12-year-old.
Well, sometimes those 12-year-olds know more than we think. So, any closing thoughts that you'd give if somebody was starting a business and saying, "Hey, I want to get in a business with my dad or my daughter, or I want to, I'm thinking of employing them and making this a bit of a family business." Any closing thoughts you'd give them?
I mean, I would give them, you have to communicate. And you can't carry grudges. Because, I mean, in a very short time period, you'll have an ulcer. I mean,
We don't want any of that. So
yeah.
communicate, communicate, communicate. Don't carry
Yeah.
grudges. Deal with things in a timely way.
Expectations. Yeah. Expectations, boundaries, work things out.
And don't push people into the family business that don't want to be there.
True.
Yes. I mean, people have a skill set and their job, which is where you spend most of your waking hours, has to be in your skill set. Otherwise, you'll be miserable and your boss will be miserable.
And the family will be miserable in this
Yeah.
case. Yeah. Well, Bob Loren, thank you very much for joining us today and sharing some of your experience. And I hope that that's as useful to some people in their own family businesses. Thank you very much.
Thank
Thank
you.
you.
That was the Humanergy Leadership Podcast. My name's David Wheatley. For further information about Humanergy, go to humanergy.com or check out our latest book, What Great Teams Do Great, from all good bookstores. Have a good one. Stay healthy.